Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the debut episode of Takeover Tuesdays with author Lucretia and Jill. I am super, super excited. This is my debut radio show, y'all. Excuse my nerves. It's my first time. I am super excited. Also joining us today is Facebook Live. So we're doing a little bit of both, but even if you're watching on Facebook Live, which I do appreciate, I ask that you also call in and interact with me on the show. Bear with me as I'm kind of tunneling through this thing, but we have an exciting show for you tonight. Just so excited about all that God is doing. I just can't even describe. And yeah, I'll be looking away Facebook for a while because I'm kind of looking at some stuff, but I'm just in awe of all that God is doing in my life. This has been a dream of mine. This is something that both my best friend and I have talked about for a long time, and it has happened courtesy of none other than Apostle Johnny Floyd. So he is our show sponsor. We are so grateful for him pushing me and getting out there going. So we are so excited. So hold on just a second. We got some audio issues going on. Okay. Forgive me, y'all, but my phone's on do not disturb, and somebody kind of joined in. But we've got all kind of issues going on, so bear with me, and we're going to figure this thing out. How about that? I don't know why it's playing. Hold on. So, okay. We're going to try this again. Hold on. I don't know. Can somebody call in on the radio and tell me if you can still hear me on the radio side of it? Because it's doing all kind of crazy things, and I'm getting ready to start sweating in a minute. But even if we don't get it to go on the radio, Facebook Live is still going, and we're going to work this thing out. So the show, again, is sponsored by none other than Apostle Johnny Floyd, and we do appreciate him, his pushing, his motivation, and also his coaching. He is a great coach. So let's just dive right in. Today we are going to be talking about my novel, Sophomore Mom. Many of you are familiar with Sophomore Mom. There are those that are not quite familiar with it. So Sophomore Mom, who is Sophomore Mom? That's the question that was posed to me earlier this week. And when the question was asked, I immediately started talking about the book. But the truth is, who is Sophomore Mom? Although it is in novel form, I am Sophomore Mom. Yes, so this show is going to get very raw. I have to be extremely transparent. Some people will look at me after this and go, wow. I had no idea that that was her story, but it's time out. It's time out from hiding behind the shame, hiding behind the perceived guilt, and continuing to be a victim over and over and over again. So Sophomore Mom is the story, the main character of that book. Her name is Liana Champion. And Liana is a young girl who discovers at the age of 15 that she is going to be a mother. That's not an easy task, I know, because I went through it. The story is different for me in that I was 14 years old when I discovered that I would be a mother to my oldest daughter. So, y'all, it's going to get raw. But for years, I felt extremely guilty for what I felt like was my role in it and how I felt like I should have done life differently, how I should have made different choices. But as I began to write Sophomore Mom, those of you that know me as author Lucretia Angel, you know that I have several published works. And out of all the books that I wrote, Sophomore Mom was the most difficult book to write because Sophomore Mom truly is my story. Now, there are some things in it that, of course, are fictionalized to bring it around to story format. Some things I wish would have happened in real life as far as how the abusers were dealt with. But, hey, if you can't do it in real life, do it in a book. I always say whether that is making something wonderful happen for you or enacting that revenge. So, the hardest part in writing Sophomore Mom was my concern for the backlash. I knew that there would be certain backlash because we as a community, as a whole, in Black communities, and I mean, I know this doesn't just happen in Black communities, but it happens in every community. If you tell what happened, then it's going to go several different ways. Sometimes you will have those that will be supportive of you and that will try to find resources for you, try to find help for you. My mama, let me say this, my mom had no idea that I suffered the abuse that I did. And right now I can say I thank God for that because my mama would probably still be in jail. In writing Sophomore Mom, a lot of truth was revealed, and it also not only was revealed to my readers, but some things my mother was finding out for the first time. And no matter how I said, Mama, it's just a story, it's just a story, a mother knows her child. And so she knew that it wasn't just a story. It was, in fact, my reality. I first began to suffer abuse at the age of about 3 or 4 years old. And I can truly say that my first abusers were female babysitters. So, you know, a lot of times we as women and when we have little girls, we are extremely cautious about men that they are around. But I want to bring awareness to sexual abuse and letting people know that it's not just women. I mean, not just men that are abusing little girls. There are women abusing little girls, and there are men abusing little boys as well. My story is not unique. I know that. There are so many silent sufferers. And I have found that the silent suffering has continued throughout my life. So the thing is, how long do you continue to be a victim? How long do you let your abuser have power over you? So in just a couple days, on October 10th, I will celebrate my 43rd birthday. God is so good, and yes, I look good for 43. But it wasn't until after I turned 40 that I actually sought out real help concerning the sexual abuse. And when I did so,
I did so by way of going to a counselor because I had all this rage. Nobody saw, those that were around me didn't see the rage. They didn't see the anger. They didn't see the frustration. They didn't see when I was screaming behind closed doors. They, ooh, y'all, this is getting deep. They didn't see when I was crying out in the darkness and screaming into the pillow where no one else could hear. But I knew what was going on. I couldn't pray it away. And y'all know, those that know me know I am a praying woman. But this was something I couldn't pray away. I couldn't figure it out. And I found with my family, I seemed to be taking things out on them a little more and a little more. So finally, I said, something has got to change, and I need to get help. So when I sought counseling, the first thing I told the counselor is, yes, I was a victim of sexual abuse as a child. No, I don't want to deal with it. We're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about why I got all this rage. Why am I so pissed? Okay, I said pissed. I was like, why am I so mad? Why do I want to punch a hole in the wall? What is going on? What is this all about? And she listened to me talk, and she said, we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about. We won't go there if you don't want to go there. She said, but the reality is everything that you're feeling now stems back to the sexual abuse and the fact that you've never dealt with it. And I told her, I said, I did. I went to a counselor once, and this lady took me so far. She had me in a dark room, and she told me to take my mind back to that place, and she wanted me to write letters to all the abusers and all of that. I wasn't trying to do all of that. That woman had me screaming in the shower. I was like, first of all, she had me feeling like I was crazy, and I don't want to endure that again. So thank God for good counselors. Because this counselor said she took you way too fast. She didn't follow the proper steps. But if you will allow me to, I'll help you. It was through that counseling that I realized this thing went much deeper than anything I had imagined. I had glamorized the abuse, and I'll tell you why. You know, you hear stories of child sexual abuse and rape and things like that. And a lot of times when you hear these stories, it's told from a perspective of great violence, where there's so much pain and the child is, you see images of a child balled up in a corner and just hurting and, oh, my God, I can't believe this person did this to me, and they're so traumatized and they can't eat and they're wet in the bed. They're doing all of these things. And you wonder, what's going on with the child? So then that causes the parent, a good parent, to become cautious and go, hey, what's going on with the baby? Why are their grades dropping in school? And why is their behavior so different? But in my case, that wasn't the case. And there's a, what I have coined the term, the McDonald's mentality, or the celebrated sexual abuse. What that is, in my opinion, that's when someone takes a child and they love on that child. Oh, they show that child that they are just the most beautiful thing in the world. They are so special. Oh, I love you so much. And this is our happy time. But what happened with me was I was introduced to sexual activity again, like I said, at the age of 3 years old. My parents, when they would go out, they would leave us with the neighborhood teens. Of course, they're safe. They were girls. And, you know, we would They would babysit us. I grew up in the city of Chicago. And at that time, which Spectrum is coming back, but we had what was called Spectrum and On TV. And that was the cable back then. Telling my age, but that's okay. I'm still fabulous. But when my parents would leave and it would be late at night, the babysitters would always turn to the pornography channel. And with them turning to the pornography channel, they would have me to watch the pornography with them. And to this day, I have not seen, not that I still watch it, y'all, be real, but I have not ever seen a pornographic video where the woman didn't look like she was having a good time. The man didn't seem like, oh, yeah, this is great. I don't care if it's two people or 20 people. They always made it look like that porn was such a wonderful thing. That's why you kind of got sex is so rampant, and people tend to get involved in it at such young ages because never is it really perceived as being a bad thing. So, and thank you all on Facebook, everybody that's joining me again for my radio show. I'm super excited. But getting back, they always display these images as if it's wonderful. You've never seen a McDonald's commercial that said, when these fries get cold, they're going to be nasty. So you might want to get them while they're hot. But that's the reality of it. They don't say this cheeseburger will still look the same in a week if you just sit it out. But it will. They show you the smoke coming off of it, and they show the kids the Happy Meal toys. And that's what the abusers did to me with pornography. They showed me the images of the women smiling and the perceived joy, the perceived happiness that was involved in the acts that they were presenting to me. And after showing me this over several periods of time, then the next step for them was to say, hey, won't you try this and won't you try that? Now, mind you, I'm the age of 3 and 4 years old. So what else do you do when you have the babysitters that bounce you on their knees, take you to the store, buy you candy, seemingly loves on you? Okay, I'll make you happy, and this is fun, right? So it wasn't something that I would have went to my mom and said, Mama, when y'all leave, then this is what's happening. Because I mean, that's just like, you know, having that piece of cake that's hidden in the refrigerator. And if you let somebody know that you got that piece of cake hidden in the refrigerator, then that's no longer your cake. It's not exclusive to you. You're not special anymore because whoever wants to eat your cake can have your cake. So because of it, I retained that as, oh, that's my moment of happiness. As y'all can see, I'm those on Facebook that can see, those on the radio, I mean, you can look at the graphics. But I am a brown-skinned beauty. And just to even make that statement, to say I'm a brown-skinned beauty, shows just how far I have come in my life. I, growing up in the 80s especially, I was ostracized and treated horribly by those that were supposed to love me, telling me, oh, you so black, you so ugly, your hair so nappy. And so because of that, I never saw beauty in myself. All I saw was all of the horrible things everybody said to me. Those that wanted to play with my sister because she was light-skinned with long, pretty hair, and I was dark-skinned with thick hair. thick hair. And so, oh no, didn't nobody want to play with me. Didn't nobody want to fool with Kiki. But so that was an opportunity I later found for the abusers to capitalize on. This is something I want to make people aware of. If you have a child that is seemingly reserved, not because they have abuse going on or anything like that, but if you find that that child doesn't seem to play as much as others, or they kind of keep to themselves a little bit more, or they may seem a little sad after interacting with others, check. They may not tell you exactly what it is. Oh, my mom, okay. Daddy, I'm okay. But with me, I was always to myself because ain't nobody want to play with me. I was black cat. I was the ugly one, so they say. But nobody wanted to have that interaction with me. So when I was shown attention, I gravitated towards that attention. So the abusers found it easy to bounce me on their knee and to get me to do whatever they wanted me to do, even to the point my daddy used to buy cigarettes by the carton. And they said, Kiki, I want you to go and get a pack of your daddy's cigarettes for me. Okay. So first I start off by sneaking a cup, as we call them, squares. I sneak a couple squares for them and hand them to them. But then they got greedy and they wanted packages. So then when I steal a whole pack of cigarettes from my daddy for him, daddy started noticing. But he never thought his golden child was stealing his cigarettes. That just didn't even make no sense. they had me trying to smoke. just whatever they wanted me to do, I wanted to make them happy because I felt like they were making me happy. So I remember my older sister, Carrie, she was smoking a cigarette one day, and I said to her, I said, Carrie, let me get a puff off that. She looked at me like I had lost my mind. I was like, come on, Carrie, I know what I'm doing. And she said, okay. She told me to take the cigarette and do like that. And when I did, I thought I was going to choke to death. I thought my sister was trying to kill me. And when I finished choking, my sister said, don't you ever in your life put another cigarette in your mouth, my little five-year-old self. So I can say, yes, I was able to quit smoking cold turkey at the age of five. Thanks to my sister, Carrie. But even Carrie had no idea as to everything that was going on in my life. So, y'all, I know it's getting deep. I know it's getting heavy in here. I need to take a quick breath because if I don't, I'm going to overwhelm you all as well as me being overwhelmed. So, let's acknowledge our sponsors and do a couple commercials, and we'll be right back. And thank you, everybody on Facebook that's joining. Here we go.
Are you enjoying the show and want to experience more of today's story? You can do so by purchasing your copy today at bit.ly/LaCrecia. Again, that's bit.ly/LaCrecia. This book is available in both paperback and ebook. Happy reading. Authors, have you completed your manuscript but have no clue how to move forward? Let us help. HisPen Publishing has a knowledgeable staff and all the tools you need to get you published. With affordable pricing to fit your budget, we'll take you from manuscript to market in no time. Visit us online at www.hispenpublishing.com. join Apostle Jenny Floyd weekly on Thursday night at 7 p.m. Eastern for an in-depth study of the book Spiritual Authority by Watchman Nee. Dial in to the show at 323-870-3769, or you can tune in online by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/Apostle Floyd.
All right. Again, thank you all so much for joining me. We are discussing my book, Sophomore Mom, and we are doing so by way of me telling my story as the sophomore mom. So when we left, we were talking about child sexual abuse and how abusers have a way of sneaking in and taking advantage. But part of this show does tell the long-term impact. So jumping right back in, there is a statement that was made in the book Sophomore Mom. And when I wrote this line, in fact, I pretty much penned the entire book off this one statement. And the statement is, my innocence was stolen before I even knew what innocence was. Just when I make that statement alone, and I think over that statement, I think of the reality of that statement. My innocence was stolen before I even knew what innocence was. Again, I know that my story is not unique. There are a lot of people that share my same story. It took me 43 years to be bold enough to come over the radio waves and live via Facebook to look people, well, to allow you to look me in my face to tell this story. So at that point, when I made that statement, I realized I felt like I never stood a chance. I never stood a chance at life, not because I had horrible parents, not because I was a horrible person. Thank God I've never been arrested. I've never gotten into any kind of real trouble. I've never gotten into drugs. I never dove into alcohol. I didn't resort to prostitution. And that's a lot of things that victims of sexual abuse endure. Those are a lot of paths that they take. But I felt like my life was snatched away from me, because what the abuse taught me was, if somebody doesn't like you, you can use your body to gain their attention. If someone feels like you're not good enough, you can find something in your body to make them feel like you're good for something. Following the abuse of the babysitters, we moved away, and I felt like I was in a safe place now because I was away from them, only to run back into the same situation with a next door neighbor that wanted to show me so much attention and wanted me to spend the night at her house. And, oh, she told my mom, she's my little sister. So because I had already had a history of abuse, it wasn't hard for her to continue that path of abuse with the sleepovers and the, oh, let her come over, let me do her hair. But again, this was happy time. This was
I'm going to make you feel special. Oh, oh, you're so pretty. And so I found myself right back in that boat with yet another abuser. And then this is the part that didn't want to have to tell. But, yeah, this is the part that I'll have to tell. So visiting family. When I got involved with male abusers, they came in the form of family. They came in the form of an uncle and of a cousin. Now, mind you, the black cat responses and remarks and the, oh, your hair's so nappy, and she's ugly, she's this, she's that, that was family that did that. I remember as a small child, I remember my aunt doing my hair. I had to go to Tennessee for the summer. And this is the very reason I have family in Tennessee, and I love my family. But, I mean, even till this day, I look at Tennessee as that place of horror. Not that the state did anything to me, but it created so many horrible memories that I'm like, Tennessee, I take it or leave it. But my aunt was doing my hair, and she talked about how nappy my hair was. My hair was so horrible. And there was a TV show called Grace Face Coasters. And I remember her having my cousins, and I think even my sister was in the line, but they were all lining up, walking past, touching my hair, and acting as though my hair was cutting them. It was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. I cried so much, but of course I couldn't cry in front of them. I had to cry in the bathroom, or I had to cry away from everybody else's view. But it was torture for me. So because of that torture for me, my uncle, he used that as an opportunity to say, hey, come here. Let's do this, or let's do that. And I know, I mean, I can only tell my story because I only have permission to tell my story, but I can say that there were others that suffered the same fate by way of uncles. And so the uncle would use the opportunity to fondle me and do different things to make me smile, make me happy in the midst of the tears that was going on because of how everybody were treating me. And I'm sure children are cruel, y'all. Those are some cruel little suckers. And even now, I imagine if I had this conversation with some of my cousins, and I have had this conversation with my sister, I don't believe they realized the impact of what their actions were doing and how bad it was. But again, it opened the door to the abuse because there was somebody in the sea of what I felt like was everybody hating me. There was somebody that I felt like wanted to show me attention. And that was good attention. That was good attention. So not only did I endure that with that uncle, but there was a cousin, and he would do and also have me to do things that are just horrible. They were horrible. I look at my daughters growing up. I have three daughters, and I have nieces, and I couldn't imagine my daughters or my nieces enduring the things that I endured. So because of this, because of the constant acts, it led to a life of promiscuity, because with that promiscuity, it was like, oh, you don't like me? You don't want to be my boyfriend? I bet I know something you do like. Sex became an attention getter. Not that I was sleeping with any and everybody. Never been the one to sleep with this one and that one and this one and that one at the same time. Even in my mess, I had some morals. So you're not running no trains on me. I'm just keeping it real. Y'all, I told you these waters was going to get deep today. But even in that, it was, let's do this, let's do that. And I know you'll be okay with this. So in sophomore mom, Liana tells her teacher that at the time when she became pregnant, she had a condom in her wallet. And that was definitely my reality. There was a condom in my purse. But I was afraid that even though I was giving so much of myself away as it was, I had no value of myself. It was like, this was the ticket right here. That if I had said, hey, wait, no, stop. I need you to do this. I need you to put this condom on. I need you to protect me. I didn't even have sense enough to know that I needed to protect myself, not only from pregnancy, but all kind of stuff. There's all kind of stuff out here. But in my mind, it was all about pleasing the man, the guy. What can I do to make him happy? So I spent all this time focusing so much attention on making the abusers happy that it was easy for me to continue the pattern of trying to make the guys happy. And even though it wasn't in a sexual aspect, I have allowed myself throughout the years to bend over backwards at times, even when it hurts me, to make someone else happy. So that kind of goes into the long-term effects of the sexual abuse. So becoming a mother at the age of 15 was not easy. It was really hard having to get up and watch my friends get ready for school and enjoy school. And I knew that when I left school, when the bell rang, I had to go around to the babysitter's house and pick up my daughter. 15 years old, sophomore in high school, and I'm a mother. People were so cruel. In the story, sophomore mom, Liana makes a statement. She's upset because she's on a bus, a city bus. The story is set in Chicago, which is where I grew up. And she has a swollen belly because she's pregnant. And these ladies are looking at her and, you know, rolling their eyes. Of course, when people see a pregnant girl, she fast, she nasty. Her mama ain't no good, because if she had any kind of mama, she wouldn't be sitting up pregnant. It wasn't my mama's fault. My mom had no idea what was going on. My mother was trying to provide for her daughters. So my mother at that point was a single mother trying to raise me and my sister. And so Liana made the statement saying, you don't know me. You don't know nothing about me. And if you knew my story, I wonder, would you look at me differently? So that's what I'm doing. That's what me, Lucretia Angel, is doing. I'm telling Liana's story. I'm telling my story. I'm telling the story for the teen mothers that are not just fast, not just nasty, not just disobedient, but I'm speaking out for the young girls who have now, some still young girls and some that have become women, that endured these things and had their life completely changed by having their innocence stolen before they even knew what innocence was. So being a teen mother, I knew that's not something I wanted to continue to do. I didn't want to keep having babies by all these people. I've always been a girl that desired family. I've always loved family. My parents, again, were divorced, and I always wanted to see family, and I wanted to raise my daughter up in a family and any future children in a family. So at the age of 16, I got married, not for love. I don't think he loved me no more than I loved him, but we both felt like we had something to prove. He wanted to prove to his family that, hey, he's 18 years old, he's grown, and he can support a wife and a kid. And me, I knew the Lord. My mother raised me in church. I didn't want to be fornicating. I didn't want to have a bunch of babies by a bunch of people. So I figured, okay, so if I get married, then I don't have to worry about sinning against God by fornicating, and any future children that I have will be born in my marriage. So problem solved, or so I thought. But when you put a 16-year-old and an 18-year-old together as a married couple with no guidance, things happen. And through that marriage, I suffered a lot of abuse. A lot of physical abuse, emotional abuse, a lot of abuse. I endured it for a long time. And right today, he and I, we've forgiven each other. We have become great, great, great friends, and we were great co-parents to our children. But after him, then there was another husband, then there was another husband. And I've had some of my closest friends, why do you keep getting married? Why do you want that? Because my heart's desire is to have family, to recapture what I felt was stolen, what was stolen from me through that abuse, through my innocence being stolen. There was a statement, there's a part of the book where Liana talks about when her mother had to talk with her about keeping yourself pure and not letting these boys take advantage of you and do whatever it is that they want to do to you. But just like Liana in the story, my reality was when mama had that, when mama had that conversation with me and my sister, it was several years too late. But my mama didn't know that at the age of 3, that she had to talk to me about sex. I mean, who thinks to do that? Who thinks to talk to their child about sexual abuse? Yeah, no means no. Don't let nobody touch your private parts. But who starts it at 3? Most people don't start that conversation until their child reaches school age. I mean, right now, 3-year-olds are singing Baby Shark, do-do-do-do, whatever that song is. Parents are trying to guide them and learning their ABCs and potty training real good, not having accidents. Who knows that I need to be teaching my child about sex at 3? Who does that? So I've lived a life in fast forward. Everything about me has been in fast forward because my innocence was stolen. So through the counseling, I thank God for good counselors. Through that, I was able to realize how the sexual abuse impacted my life in so many ways. It impacted my life in the relationships that I chose and the fact that I was so willing to settle for anything instead of truly capturing my value, my worth, and knowing who I am, whose I am, and what I'm worthy of. So when the attention was shown to me by a man that seemingly loved me or at least felt like I was good enough to make a wife, then I looked at it each time as, ooh, this opportunity may not come around again. I better jump on this because, I mean, who's going to want to marry me with all my issues? Who's going to want to marry me with all my kids? Let's be real. I'm a mother of 4. So who is going to want to give me this opportunity? Because my worth, my value was stripped away. And because that worth and value was stripped away and never, well, I won't say never because it has now been recovered, but for all those years, hadn't been recovered. You know, a lot of times we're taught, especially in the Christian church, call on Jesus, pray about it, pray about everything, go to the Bible. Ain't no such thing as depression. I mean, you just need to pray it away. You can't pray everything away. Some things, some roots are so deeply ground that it takes more than prayer. Yes, I'm a praying woman, and I believe God with all my heart, and I believe when I pray, he'll answer, and he does every time. But there are some things, some issues you need to get help for. There are some issues that we need to reach out to the resources that are available to us. One book that my counselor told me about that I had no idea was, it's called The Courage to Heal. And she and I went through this book. It's by Ellen Bates and Laura Davis, The Courage to Heal, A Guide for Women Survivors of Child Sexual Abuse. And we went through that book slowly. There were so many victims. But the thing is, with victims, we're told that we can't be victims. I was speaking to my sister friend today, and we talked about how people use the term, oh, now you're trying to play the victim. But what is playing the victim? When you tell somebody they're trying to play the victim, then you abuse them all over again. every time someone doesn't acknowledge someone's abuse or what they endured or brushes it off, you don't realize, or people don't realize, you're abusing that person all over again. You're telling them all over again, you're not worthy, you're not worth it, your story doesn't matter. But yes, your story does matter. This happened to you. This impacted your life. And one thing about the past, we can never get it back. But it's so important to teach women and men that have endured sexual abuse that you can reclaim your life. It doesn't matter what happened. I suffered my final act of sexual abuse through my uncle at the age of 15 years old. I already had a daughter, and I was 15 years old. And just like when I was 3 and 4, he started it out by putting a pornographic movie on the television. And from there, it was, so how does that make you feel? What that got you thinking about? Of course. Oh, sex. I mean, I already got a baby. So sex wasn't nothing that I wasn't aware of. Of course. I was like, ain't nobody gonna have sex with. Oh, well, niece, we can. And for years, in fact, from that moment until I saw the counselor a year ago, that continued to stab at me and to gut me all over again, because I said, how in the world could I allow him to do this to me at age 15? I should have known better. But thank God, again, for a good counselor, because she said to me, if this wasn't something he had introduced to you as a child, there's no way he could have came to you out of the blue at 15 and did this. So her making that statement freed me up from the years and years that I tortured myself, saying, how could I allow this? And so today, even while I was going through the counseling, everything began to bubble up and things began to come out after sophomore mom was released. And that uncle sent me a text message. And I found myself right back in that place, that cowering away. And I was in my 40s. So it doesn't stop when the abuse stops. It doesn't stop when you feel like you've moved on with your life. If you are a victim of sexual abuse, if this is something that you have endured in your life at any point, or if you know of someone that has dealt with sexual abuse, I encourage you to please get help. Please reach out, because it's time for us to break free. It's time for us to reclaim our lives. It's time for us to realize that we are worthy of love, that we are worth it, that it's okay for us to want to live a normal life. No. If you are a victim of abuse, it's not your fault. It's nothing that you wore, nothing that you said, nothing that you did. There is never an excuse for abuse. And so I'm hoping my transparency tonight will free others up. To hear more about the story, of sophomore mom, and to kind of follow that journey more, I do encourage you to please support, get the book. You can go to my website, www.lucretiaandjel.com, or you can go bit.ly/Lucretia, and that's spelled LACRICIA. But please get the book and know that you're worth it and you're worthy. Also located in the back of the book, there are some resources for sexual abuse victims. I do want to point out there is a corporation called RAINN, R-A-I-N-N, and it is the largest anti-sexual violence organization. Their website is www.rainn.org, and they have a 24-hour helpline that you can call. That number is 1-800-656-4673. Again, that's 1-800-656-HOPE, H-O-P-E. For teen parents, there is an American Pregnancy Helpline, and that phone number is 866-942-6466. And there is also the Maternal Assistance Program. That phone number is 713-680-8336, and that's 713-680-TEEN. This has been amazing. This has been freeing. Again, I cannot thank Apostle Johnny Floyd enough for giving me this platform and giving me this opportunity to share my stories. Now, I'll be back every week on Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern. Not every subject will be this deep. not every story that I dive into will be this raw. There'll be some fun here. There'll be some joy. I'm hoping that you all will call in and be a part of the show. I hope you will continue to follow me, continue to support my career as an author. I am walking in my calling, and I'm stepping in the thing that God has called me to do. It's so amazing that God has given me a ministry without walls, a ministry without borders, and a worldwide platform. Who knew? Kiki, Black Cat, who knew that this would one day be my reality, that I could walk in the beauty that God has created in me and that I could live the life that he has called me into. I'm a victim no more. I am now victorious. And no matter what your situation is, no matter what your story is, your story may not be like my story, but you too can be victorious. You can triumph over whatever situation you have endured. And you know what, y'all? When I started this broadcast, I didn't know how I would do it, but I did it, y'all. I did it. And so thank you all so, so much for joining me. Thank you for praying with me. Again, get my book, Sophomore Mom. You can go to my website, www.lucretiaandjel.com, or bit.ly/Lucretia, spelled LACRICIA. Victims no more. We can overcome anything that we face, any situation that we face. You don't have to hold back anymore. You don't have to be a victim anymore. You can make it through. And whatever your dream is, know that you can achieve it. You're worth it. You're worthy. And until next time. I hope you'll join me for Takeover Tuesday with author Latricia and Jill. God is good, and he is ever faithful. He's ever gracious. Thank you, thank you, thank you again, Apostle Johnny Floyd, for this opportunity, for this platform. Please check him out on Thursday nights at 7 o'clock p.m. on his show, as he talks about spiritual authority with Watchman Nee. So you can go to www.blocktalkradio.com/Apostle Floyd to join him. Can't wait to see you there. Come join me back next week and let's do this all over again. Have a blessed day. Thank you for the love, Facebook.